We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your podcast home of the Utah State Aggies. This is another edition of the Aggies All the Way podcast with Scott Girard from Learfield IMG College.
All right, welcome in. It's another edition of the Aggies All the Way podcast. I am Scott Girard. And okay, first off, apologies. This should have been posted a long time ago. Traveling back from Mountain West Conference Media Day, some other obligations kept me from getting it posted sooner. So again, I promised you a Mountain West Conference Media Day recap. Here it is. Should have been done at the end of last week, but I apologize. At least we have it for you now. So we will deliver on it, and a lot of fun down there. Everybody's undefeated. Everybody's excited. If you're unaware of Mountain West Conference Media Day, it's always a lot of fun because everybody's in a good mood. All your coaches are usually upbeat. They're positive. They feel good about their chances. They feel pretty good about where they're at. And so you usually get some good, honest answers and a good indication on where guys think about their teams and where they're at. Now, nobody's going to come out and say, "Oh my gosh, we're horrible. This is going to be a long season." Everybody's usually upbeat and positive, but you can usually read between the lines and kind of feel like and get a good feel of where people think their team is at. All right. So what we're going to do here on this recap of Mountain West Conference Media Day, I've got some excerpts of some interviews that you'll hear right out of the gate. Won't play the whole interview because I'm not sure how interested people are in getting to know on what to expect from New Mexico and Colorado State and some of these other teams. But what we'll do is pull some of the audio in relation to, in regards to what people said about Utah State. So first off, I wanted to go to Rocky Long, and this is myself and Hans Olsen. We had a chance to chat with Rocky on day one of Mountain West Conference Media Day, who had some really interesting comments about what he expects out of Utah State and did not mince any words whatsoever on where he thinks, if he had a vote, where he would put the Aggies in the Mountain West Conference Power Poll.
I think they're the best football team in this conference coming back. When you go through, which we do in the summer, we go through every team we're going to play. We see who they have coming back. We also watch and see how they played last year if we hadn't played them.
Yeah.
And so everybody on the other side, we haven't played. The three we're playing this year, we haven't played for the last 2 years. They have more good football players coming back at Utah State than any other team in this conference. So obviously that's the first league game for both of us, so it's going to be a big-time game, I think. They got the best quarterback in the league. If you have the best quarterback in the league, you're obviously a contender. You're obviously somebody very difficult to beat. And then they got an experienced coach too. I'd have loved to see them hire a rookie head coach. That would have helped us too, but they didn't do that. They picked a guy that had great success there before and knows what he's doing. So
you and Gary probably go back quite a ways.
We do. We go back. I think we were in the WAC together for, I don't remember. It's been so long. But so he's back, and he'll do a good job, and he's got really good players coming back. So if I was picking, I'd pick them as the favorite to win the conference.
When you those times that you've made the trips into Logan to that Utah State campus and stadium, difficult place to play, tough fans, tough environment, could be better. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's one of the best things about our conference. Anytime you travel, the home team has a huge advantage. You know, you travel to Utah State. Well, it's a little tiny place out in the middle of nowhere, and you got to fly someplace else, and you got a bus. And then they got a beautiful little stadium. We hope that our stadium is as nice as the little stadium they have that is usually full, and the fans are right on top of you. I mean, they got a lot of other nice facilities, too. So they have an advantage in their stadium. They also have an advantage because you had to travel there.
Do they fly them into Salt Lake?
And that's where we fly, into Salt Lake, and then we bus up
to Logan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Some strong comments from Rocky Long. He'd have Utah State ranked number one and has a lot of and look, there's probably some gamesmanship going on there, too, a little bit on Rocky's part. But the guy's been around the conference a long, long time. He knows talent when he sees it, and he really likes that Utah State team. He'd have them number one if he had a vote. Now, remember, the Aggies were picked to finish second in the Mountain Division. Fresno State picked to finish first in the West Division. Boise State first in the Mountain Division. And San Diego State picked to finish second over in the West Division as well. Let's go back to some of the conversations. Now, Bob Davie, who, again, the head coach, former head coach in Notre Dame, now at New Mexico, when I had a chance to chat with him, we started the interview. He had some unfortunate flashbacks to the game last year in Logan.
Had a brief flashback to that game in Logan last year, man. That was I've been in a few bad ones. That's about as bad as I've ever been in. You know, just the whole atmosphere, just the fast break kind of offense. That thing just exploded up there on us.
How hard is it to prepare for pace in an offense like that?
I think it's hard to prepare for good players.
Okay.
You know, pace is something now that so many people are doing, quite honestly.
Yeah.
They are fast, though. You know, Utah State last year, I think comparison to most teams, they are faster.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the slam dunk in basketball, the way the momentum of things can get going on you. And I thought Utah State as a team last year really was kind of like that. Like, I associated almost with a basketball game.
Gotcha.
You know, you got the whole student section over there, and the place is kind of going crazy, and you get a couple big plays. And it was amazing how many games they just got out in front so fast, you know, and just scored points in bunches.
Yeah.
And, again, did a heck of a job. And, you know, certainly the quarterback, the offensive coordinator, really good, really good.
Bob Davie's an interesting guy, and he's another guy that had you could tell that he's a bit concerned on where his team is. He's got back-to-back 3-9 seasons. After it seemed like they had turned the corner there in Albuquerque, they've gone backwards the last couple of years, and they've got some work to do to get that thing turned around. He knows it and was very well aware of it. All right, so let's go back to the comments. Now, if you listen to my show on the Zone Sports Network, you heard some of my coworkers giving me some grief about this next clip. This is a conversation. I sat down and chatted with Colin Hill. He is the quarterback of Colorado State. And if that name doesn't ring a bell, it probably should. He was the quarterback that threw the pass that looked like it had beat Utah State in that game in Fort Collins. However, remember, the wide receiver stepped out of bounds. They reviewed it. And before you know it, the ref gets on the air and says, or gets on the mic and says, no touchdown, player stepped out of bounds, that's it, game's over, Utah State wins. So it was a crazy, now we know our perspective of it, but what was the perspective of Colorado State? And that was kind of my back and forth that I had with Colin Hill. I wanted to know from his angle what it was like going from thinking you had won the game on a Hail Mary pass to then losing the game because a wide receiver had stepped out of bounds. Here's Colin Hill's perspective on what went down.
I threw it. Everybody was kind of celebrating in the corner.
Hell of a throw, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, Preston made a great play, and you know, we're going nuts. Everybody's running around. And then I go up and I'm talking to coach, and he's saying it's over, it's over. I was like, yeah, it's over. And so then I'm walking, and so then I see the refs are all together, and I'm like, I wonder what there is to talk about. Maybe there's time left. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So then they review it, and so we're like, well, he caught it. Like, we know he caught it in bounds. Like, we should be good. But then, you know, once they got on the mic, they show it again, and, you know, sure enough, he did step out. But that was tough, you know, because we're up, and then, you know, Jordan throws a pass, we're down, we drive, and then, you know, just an ultimate roller coaster, and then having it taken away was tough.
You know, and that's the thing. I thought maybe it was a celebration penalty or something like that, and I'm thinking, okay, well, they're backing up 15, and, you know, it's still over. But, right. I mean, just as bizarre and weird a game, and I'm sorry for making you relive it.
That's all good.
But it was a crazy game, but it did show, I think, how talented Colorado State is, and I know that you have a lot of expectations for yourself and this team going on into this year.
Yes, sir. I mean, last year we really were talented. Just couldn't put it together.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of things, but I think we're really, really excited about this year. I think we're talented. I think we're gonna have a lot more fight. Guys are a lot more bought in. But I'm really excited about it.
So there you go, Colin Hill at Colorado State. Those are some of the highlights from some of the players and coaches from around the Mountain West Conference that I thought you might be interested in. All right, so let's go to some more of our long-form conversations. Here is Teepan Naliyai and Jordan Love. Both players stood up to the mic, had a chance to chat with both of them, and I started off by asking Jordan Love what he thinks of this new Heisman campaign in which the Aggies are promoting Jordan Love as a Heisman Trophy candidate.
Oh, man, that thing was it's big time. I mean, I can't say enough about it. It's like a dream come true to see that. But I appreciate Utah State and what they're doing for that, trying to push that. But it's definitely something that's big, something that I always remember. So can't say enough about that.
When did things start to slow down for you as a quarterback? I mean, I remember you coming in as, you know, obviously you sat out the first year, and then the freshman year, you know, there were some really great moments and then maybe not some great moments. But when did things really start to click for you as a quarterback?
I'd say, so after my redshirt freshman year, I'd say I got a lot of experience that year, getting that playing time and just learning the offense even more. And then I'd say coming off that, going to the off season, that's when I just really started diving into it and really just getting a feel for it and understanding where everything's going to be, and that's when I got really comfortable.
When you go back to that UNLV game your first year when you first got the start, I believe that was your first start, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you went out and lit it up and came from behind in that game. What did you get the sense in that game, after that game, that it could lead to something that we're seeing right now and the kind of career that you're having?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, having that be my first start, having it be such a big game and a fun game and being able to get that win, too, that was a big game to really just, I feel like, jumpstart what we were going to do. And, I mean, that's really what happened.
Teepa, last time we saw you, you came in the second half and wreaked all kinds of havoc in that bowl game. How hard was it sitting out that first half in that bowl game?
Oh, it was a little nerve-wracking, you know. I didn't want guys to beat them up too much, you know, to where I won't be able to get that much playing time. But
you're like, hey, can we kind of dial it down a little bit here?
Let's keep the game good so I can, you know, come in. But it was fun, you know. It was a good game, a good last game to finish off the season. You know, we had a lot of good takeaways from that film too. So.
Two sacks in the second half. You got to double-digit sacks on the season. What are your do you set sack goal? And you don't even need to tell us what it is, but do you set a goal for sacks going into a season?
Yeah. Ultimately, I really plan on by each week. I hope to get a certain number of sacks. You know.
Oh, so it's almost like a week to week, not a season thing.
Yeah. I try not to count it so much. I really just try to do it. You know. I don't try to limit myself to just one number. I try to just go beyond that. I just felt like keeping a number, keeping tally will kind of knock me off of my game. Just go out and just try to do it.
You burst onto the scene against Michigan State. Did you notice teams defending you differently as the season went on?
Yeah, I did a lot, especially that very next week. Got a lot of chip blocks with the running backs and a lot of double teams with the tight ends. And, you know, I felt like it was a good thing. You know, I felt like, you know, the guys are keeping an eye out
for me. They're paying attention.
So.
and almost kind of creating other opportunities for teammates too, because they're spending so much attention on you.
Yeah, so I think that's a big thing with helping other teammates, you know, try to improve is, you know, one teammate gets blocked, double team, you can always depend on another teammate to get there. So
how much improvement does it make for both sides? I mean, obviously high-powered offense, great defense. How much do you guys make each other better throughout scrimmages and practices, especially in camp?
Oh, a lot. I mean, just being able to go against this defense every day, I think that's really what helps us be so great on offense. I mean, especially going against guys like Tipa. I mean, yeah. Every day you got to watch out for him, make sure you got an eye on him coming off the line because it's so tough. But I definitely think, I mean, we're going against one of the best defenses we're going to see all year. So,
how many times did they blow the whistle saying it was a sack and you're like, no, that wasn't a sack?
About every play.
Hey, you lose some dudes on that offensive line. How do you feel like this group's going to rise to the occasion?
Yeah, we lost some dudes, but this new group we got coming in, they've done some good things. I mean, over spring ball and over the summer workouts, they've gotten a lot better, bigger and stronger. So I'm excited for them. Like I said, they don't have much playing time experience, but and that's all going to change this year.
So. Tipa, you see these guys. What do you think?
The biggest thing is, this fall camp, we're going to really help grow the D-line and the O-line.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like is the most important growth that needs to be is in the trenches, but also to have a Heisman, you know, not every team has a Heisman quarterback to go against, you know, during fall camp and spring ball. So that'll help us even more, you know, developing in the backside as well, and also just trying to get the whole defense to work together.
There's a guy that I think is going to be a really good. That I think is going to have a really good season this year. It's Justice Tate. I think the sky's the limit for him, especially in what he can do. Give me your thoughts on what you expect from him this season.
You know, Justice, I feel like he got a lot. He improved in being more explosive. And also, he's a strong guy. He's very stout, and he's very physical, and he's always in the film room with me.
Yeah.
And so, mental errors will be very slim. I feel like, and he's just a junior. That's all I can say. You know, he's just a junior, and can only imagine how his senior campaign is going to be. So,
what's the transition to the new defense been like for you?
Oh, I love it. You know, I got a feel for what a 3-4 defense is, and now I get the 4-down defense, and I feel like it's a lot more fun. You know, I get to put my hand on the ground again and get a better get off, and but also just to hit more. I feel like, you know, I drop back a lot, which you know, I'm not complaining, but I like, you know, hitting, going after the quarterback and hitting the O-line and stuff.
Jordan, on the offensive side, obviously some things are going to change. I talked to Coach Sanford, and he said we're trying to build a nice marriage between what he wants, what you are comfortable with. How do you feel like that's come along?
Oh, it's come along a great way. I mean, like you said, keeping some of the same offense that we're doing, so it wasn't a huge transition having to learn a whole new playbook, and I think that helped out our guys a lot, not having to focus on trying to learn a new playbook at the same time as trying to play well. But I think it's good having the same offense, and I mean, it worked for us last year, so I think we'll have a lot of success with it.
How about your wide receiver core? I know you lost some dudes on that side too.
Yeah, we lost some dudes, but we had a lot of dudes that, I mean, we're there last year, didn't get a chance to play as much, but they're going to get the chance this year. And then also we got some transfer dudes and some new dudes that came in, and I'm excited. It's going to be a competition in camp to see who's going to be the ones to get out there.
Who's a wide receiver that we may not be talking about, but we'll definitely be talking about at the end of the season?
I'd say Devin Tompkins.
Oh, okay.
I'd say Devin Tompkins. I mean, I think he's going to have a breakout year. He's got the speed for it, and it shows, but I think he'll be a good one. And then also, I mean, COC Mariner coming in.
Have you had a chance to work with him much?
Oh, yeah, we throw all the time. Every day we're out there throwing, so I think he'll have a good season.
A lot of expectations. You picked to finish second in the division. I know you want another crack at Boise. You want to keep it rolling. This is for both of you. First, let's start with you, Tipa. What are your expectations for this season? What do you want to accomplish this year?
Ultimately, you know, we want to make it to the Mountain West Championship, and we want to win it. But also, I know how this team is.
Yeah.
You know, we've been through this off season together, and a lot of guys coming back. You know, we have the chemistry is there, getting the new guys to adjust to the culture, the lifestyle that we have over there. And you know, I'm confident. I'm very confident that we'll do very good this year. And you know, we have our ears pinned back. You know, we're just focusing on ourselves first and really trying to get out there.
Because Jordan, I'm sure you hear it a lot, like, oh, you guys were great, but the schedule gets harder this year. You know, you lost some guys. You probably hear all that noise, and I'm sure you're like, doesn't matter. Let's go.
Exactly. I hear it all the time. But like I said, I mean, all the talk, it's all good until the season starts, and you can really see what's going to happen. So,
how what's that chemistry like in the locker room? Does it have that same kind of vibe as last year?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, we got a lot of new dudes in the locker room, but it's still got the same feel. I mean, I feel like that's a tribute just to the seniors and the leaders, just being able to make that bond happen. So it's been good.
To create that culture that you guys withstand anything.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Awesome.
So there you go, a pair of 10s, Stephen Naliai and Jordan Love. Great conversation with them. So let's go to the head coach, Gary Anderson. Now, we talked to Gary. It's kind of interesting. He never actually coached in the Mountain West Conference. He left in Utah State's final year of the WAC. So this will be his first go-around coaching teams in the Mountain West Conference. And we asked him about some of the familiarity he had with some of the other coaches. And really, remember, Chris Peterson was at Boise State when Utah State played Boise State. Rocky Long was actually in New Mexico, so there wasn't a lot of head-to-head with New Mexico. Now Rocky Long's at San Diego State. Utah State will play San Diego State. Gary Anderson talks about his team, what to expect this year, and started off by talking about seeing Rocky Long once again on the other side of the field.
I'll never forget those days when we, you know, they prided themselves on being the toughest team in the league in New Mexico. Yep. We did the same thing at Utah, and those were some fights. I know a lot of these guys from afar, and I know some of them better than others, but it's been a good group, into a couple of the coaches' meetings and be able to, you know, hang out with them. But, you know, good group of guys, and now it's time to not like each other for a few months.
There you go, because this is always fun. Everybody kind of – I was talking to Tipa, and I'm like, you know, I know everybody's supposed to be friends, but you size some people up here? And he's like, darn right I do. Absolutely.
Yeah, Tipa will do that. There's no doubt.
Expectations are high for this team, especially on the defensive side. Tell us a little bit about – from spring into fall, how guys have adjusted to maybe a new defensive philosophy.
Yeah, it's not a giant departure.
Yeah.
You know, there's some coverage tweaks and some different scenarios. And yes, we want to, you know, play some more man coverage and what have you. But yeah, you look at the corner play and their base. Not to get too technical, but their base scheme is technically, as some say, a zone defense, but it's a whole bunch of man principles to it. So there is change. You know, we're not really have the outside backers. We play more with four down defensive linemen, so there's some things to learn there. But I think they've adjusted well. The kids are excited about the opportunity to, you know, learn those tweaks, but also carry a lot of the things that they were doing in the past forward. And, you know, the big thing to me is adjusting to a new coach and understanding his techniques, his fundamentals, you know, his how he handles himself, and you know, the thing that I demand out of those coaches every day, and I preach it to our staff all the time, because it is the number one most important thing to me. And I've learned this over the years, is to, you know, you need to be a guy that takes care of kids first and a coach second. If you do that, they'll play hard for you, they'll want to learn, they'll want to become better people.
Cupboards are full, though, on that defensive side. DJ Williams, Tipa, David Woodward. You got some studs on the defensive side.
Yeah, and you know, there's some young men that, you know, we've missed. Jamarc was out for he got hurt last year, missed five or six games. We haven't seen him other than, you know, obviously with the helmet on, but we've sure seen him in that back end. I think he could be a special addition. DJ's had a tremendous offseason. He goes. The defensive backfield is going to be highly, highly competitive. In fall camp for four spots, just as well as it was in spring, but even more so now. David is a tremendous player. It's a key for us is who is next to him. It's a big discussion. It's a big question mark as we continue through camp, and there's going to be three kids that are going to battle there. You know, Kevin was there in the spring. Noah, we added Noah Young to that spot in there, and then, you know, Cash is going to come down and play some there at the linebacker position slash safety, if you will. I'm excited about the defensive line to get them back, right? We had, you know, Devon and Brayden had to play every position, every rep almost throughout spring as we got guys moving from inside to outside, and, you know, Pitch had his broken broken hand, so it was crazy. But we'll get those guys back, and I think they have high expectations for themselves of the defensive crew, and Coach Yen and his crew on the defensive coaching side see it the same.
Not to single anybody out who hasn't put on an Aggie uniform yet in a game, but keep hearing Troy Leffridge's name come up quite a bit.
Yeah, Troy is, you know, Troy is really adjusted to Division I football at our level and to the city, Logan, Cache Valley, Utah State in a very, very positive way. He's tough-minded. He takes care of himself. He has a huge care factor. You know, he wants to smack you. He worries me a little bit as far as making sure we keep him in games.
He might miss a half here and there.
Yeah. He was he plays a lot like Marquise did last year at Utah.
Gotcha.
They got the same mentality as far as, you know, what picking a ball or smacking somebody, he's probably going to take the ball, smack somebody. But he's very intelligent, and you know, we get Shaq back again now,
yeah.
Right? We didn't have Shaq all spring, and he's had a nice job of, you know, they'll compete back there. You know, Haney's another guy that's going to compete back there. I can go on and on, but Troy's done a nice job. I'm proud of how he's adjusted.
Flip to the other side of the ball. There's been two positions that people have talked about with some level of concern: offensive line at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Give us your thoughts on where those position groups are right now.
Yeah, well, that'll be the telltale sign at the end of the year when we get it all done and it's over there, over with in January at some point, and we'll look back and we'll say the offensive line was a good crew. Then we're going to be a good football team, and the same thing is going to hold true with the wide receiver crew. If they're a good crew, we'll be a good football team. If they're a great crew, we'll probably be a great football team. And we haven't hidden from that. I think we recruited the offensive line from within and added some young players. We didn't go out and say, hey, we're going to go find four JC guys, because we believed in the kids who were in the program were able to grow and develop and move themselves in that spot. It's a big challenge for them, big challenge for Coach Woods and all of us, but I love their mentality. I love where they're going, and they're going to have some competition to see who starts there also. And the wide receivers, you need to make big plays in this offense to play. You can't just be a yeoman guy that just, you know, catches the ball and falls forward for 4 yards. You have to make big plays in a spread offense. So the guy make the most big plays with a tremendous quarterback throwing it to him are going to see the field the most.
One thing on the offensive line that the previous staff was able to do, just based on how a lot of games went last year, I mean, they were able to max out a lot of three or four games on the redshirt. So
yes,
a lot of these guys are going to be leaning on did see a lot of time last year.
Yeah, they did. They got some reps, which was nice to see. You know, Alfred's the anchor of that, and we haven't seen him play other than film because he had a little injury that he got through, and he's 100% now. He's ready for camp. But, yeah, they do have some experience underneath their belt, which is that's very – that's huge, especially in those first couple games. They're not walking out there and never played in a college football game, most of them. So it's going to be fun to see where they go. And, you know, we want to be able to, you know, run the football. That's an important part of what we want to be able to do. We got G, we got Jalen back there. We got, you know, we got brass running backs who we feel very comfortable with. And, you know, Riley's joined us, and we have Enoch. So we should be able to hand the ball off and do some things and, you know, include those tight ends in the run game a little bit also.
When you left, you had, let's see, you had Michael Smith, you had Turbo
and
Kerwin. I mean,
yes,
you had a stable. Is that something that you always want to, even at Wisconsin, you always had a cast of characters back there.
Yeah,
is that something you always aspire to have?
Yeah, when we've definitely been at our best as football team, we've had three quality backs.
Yep.
And that's what we've tried to be able to recruit to by bringing in Jalen, by bringing in Riley and bringing in Enoch. You know, Mr. Bright, I love him. He's a tremendous competitor. He's a tough-minded kid. He works his tail off. And he has just been so awesome with bringing those guys in. It would be easy to sit back and say, oh, my goodness, they brought in a junior college player and they brought in a transfer and what's going on, you know, bop, bop, bop. But I gave him our philosophy at the very beginning with the running back situation, and he's understand it. He's embraced it. He pushes those guys in practice. He helps teach them and let them understand the offense. So tremendous young man. I can't wait to see him play, and I hope he has a fantastic year.
What does a guy like Jordan Love, obviously special talent, you brought Chucky in, you saw Chucky develop it all, but I remember last year I was, and I don't know why this was the moment that really stood out to me, but we were in an airport coming back from Hawaii, and I saw Chucky talking to Jordan, and it just blew me away how much bigger Jordan was. I mean, Jordan, I mean, that's a grown man right there.
Jordan is a big kid, and you look how he's continually, you know, developed his body. And when kids go through and they play, and then all of a sudden it lights fire to, hey, nutrition, hey, weight room, hey, you need to train like a quarterback, right? We lift them like a quarterback. Our quarterbacks are not going there bench press 300 pounds. I mean, let's be smart. But you look at the transformation of his body, and that's a credit to him and the strength coaches as far as for buying in and understanding. And we all know where Jordan wants to go. We don't hide from that. And you know, the goals for Jordan is to have a fantastic year, and then we're going to make a decision, right? And the credit to him, all that comes with being a quarterback that had that much success. There's stressors that are out there that are really hard to deal with. Agents right now. You know, they shouldn't be talking to Jordan, but they are, and they're reaching out to him. Well, those agents that he's talking to right now, that's not – those guys are the bottom feeders. Why are they trying to reach out to him and break the rules? That's not the way it should be. Well, he comes to me, and we talk about that. His family support is awesome when it comes to that. You know, he leans on the right people to be able to make decisions to take away those stressors, and he's a tremendous leader, consistent, tough, very coachable. Had some great coaches around him, so he has a very stable background within himself as far as that goes. And, you know, he has high expectations, but he knows he's not going to be anything without a good offensive line and without a good stable of receivers. So, you know, he pushes those kids, and, you know, that's why he's a captain, and that's why he's looked up to on his team in such a positive way.
When you bring in graduate transfers, the margin of error on them, for them personally, is pretty thin. I mean, you either help out or you get out of the way, essentially, because you don't have a lot of time to work with them. So they're either contribute or find, you know, you're going to be sitting on the bench next to me.
Yep. And it's a little unique for me. The three grad transfers we've bought in, we know Riley from afar, obviously, because he was at BYU. But, you know, Caleb was in my meeting room every day last year. Right? I know exactly what Caleb is and what he can bring to the table. Now, you know, he's playing tight end for us, which he kind of did both. And COC, you know, COC's played a lot of football, and he's excited about the opportunity. So we expect those kids to change us in a positive way. If they don't, then it's like I tell them, when we recruit JC guys or transfers, when they come in, if you don't have an immediate impact in a positive way, we failed as coaches, and you failed as a player. We made the wrong decision. So understand you're expected to come in and contribute now. That's why we brought you here.
And they embrace that.
Absolutely, yeah. If they don't want to embrace that, then, when you know them a little bit better, it's easy. I know that Caleb looks at that and is excited about competing. I know COC is the same way. And as, you know, they go through the reports you get from the weight room and what have you throughout summer, they've very positively adapted themselves to this team. There's no, you know, oh, I've come from this Pac-12, I've come from that. They're not like that.
You developed a culture there at Utah State, and Coach Wells did his best to keep it going as well, where when I was talking to Tipa and talking to Jordan, they were talking about, well, Jordan specifically talked about, I know COC. I've been throwing with him every day. I've been working with him every day. That's stuff that they have to do on their own. That's stuff that you have to be a little bit more hands-off during the summer. Yep. And to develop a culture where these guys realize we got to be on the same page. We got to work. We got to put in the work when nobody else is around us watching us. That's got to be impressive that's got to be fulfilling for you as a coach to see.
It is. Absolutely is. And, you know, I mean, COC's been obviously in a very successful program, and he's learned that. He knows that. You know, a year ago he was out there throwing with Tyler. And it was what the expectations were. This year, it's no different than Jordan. Jordan's expectations is when he sends out a text message and says, hey, we're going to throw at 2 o'clock in the indoor, is, you know, get your fanny to the indoor at 2 o'clock, and those receivers are excited about being there. So that's very comfortable for COC and Caleb to be in that situation, that scenario, and they want to do it, and they're excited about it.
On the offensive side, they had obviously a tremendous amount of success. Do you allow Coach Sanford to install, or is it just kind of a marriage of what he does and what was done last year into something where Jordan's a little bit more comfortable with?
Well, we want to keep the terminology. We want to keep the things. So we want coaches to learn more than players to learn.
Okay.
And we always believe that. We believe that when we went to Wisconsin or wherever we went. So, you know, it's in the end, it is a little similar to the transition. Obviously, the offense is very different than Wisconsin, but we walked into an offense where we wanted to keep a lot of the terminology, and Coach Ludwig did it at that point, and that was our belief then, and it's the same thing with Coach Sanford. We want to make the terminology, the learning curve, to be as little as possible for the kids and put it on the coaches, and that's exactly what we did. And as there tweaks, is there some new things and some different spots to it? Absolutely. But that would evolve with anytime, even if it's the same staff as you go through years and years. You evolve every year as a coach and, you know, try to stay on the cutting edge of football. So it's important. But the kids have grasped it. I think they have a really a very good understanding of, you know, where we want to go on offense and defense.
About 37 days away. Can't get here soon enough.
I'll take those 24 practice opportunities before the first game.
You know, the schedule's it's a little funky this year.
Yes, yes.
I mean, yeah. Wake Forest, you know, LSU in October, yeah. BYU in November. It's a weird schedule.
It is weird. It's a little different. And you know, you don't sit there and say, hey, you want to play an SEC time at that. But hey, it is what it is. Yeah. It's scheduled at that time, so you can't do it if you're going to do it. And you know, you're going to play the non-conference games, and they're not easy to find. First of all, and you're going to try to, you know, go get to and play some teams that those kids will remember. You know, would I like to stay on the West Coast and play those teams in the Pac-12? I surely would. I think it would be great for us to be able to stay. It's easier for our fans. It's easier for our kids. Yeah. And I'd like them to be at the first of the year. But, hey, the schedule is what it is. You play it, right? And away you go. And our kids get a tremendous opportunity to go, you know, fly across the country and play Wake Forest, which is a tremendous challenge. They've played really good ball at the end of the year last year. They get to go across the country again and you know, walk into Baton Rouge and play at a special place that's very difficult to play, that you know, they get to do both those for 3 hours one time in their life. So we'll enjoy it.
Head coach of the Utah State Aggies. One thing I wanted to get in before we wrap up this podcast, wanted to play back our conversation with Craig Thompson. Love chatting with the commissioner of the Mountain West Conference. Always has some interesting insight. He's always dialed in, obviously, with the TV negotiating, and that's where we spent a lot of time. Myself and Hans Olsen conducted this interview at Mountain West Conference Media Day, and always enjoy chatting with him. He'll always tell you what's on his mind. He always gives you a pretty strong answer. Asked him specifically if the Mountain West Conference was going for a longer-term contract or a shorter-term TV contract. Asked him if he felt like there'd be an increase. He answered all of them honestly. And I anticipate here in the near future, you'll hear an announcement on a new television contract with the Mountain West Conference. But here he is, the commissioner of the Mountain West Conference, Craig Thompson, talking about negotiating those new TV contracts.
Well, it's important. And, you know, and certainly I am aware, having negotiated many of these, that whatever the membership decides on, there will be distractors and people saying, well, why'd they do that? They should have gone left instead of going right, kind of a thing. And so it's not going to be a perfect deal. And as I mentioned, with 12 institutions, that there's a lot of diversity. Some people say, give me all the Thursday games as long as you can get them on. There's others that say, you know, I can't sustain any more Thursday or Friday night games. I got to play on Saturday. My fans are traveling too far to get to these games, et cetera, et cetera. It's funny, a fellow commissioner is building a home in Sun Valley, Idaho, and they're Boise State fans, and he grouses about, he's building this guy's house, and he goes, that freaking Mountain West commissioner, you tell him, quit playing at 8:30, and I can't get from Sun Valley to Boise. And we hear those types of things all the time. But, you know, it weighs heavy, but, you know, it is not my decision. We will hopefully have some options to give to the membership, and they will then ultimately decide it's kind of a compromise, let's go left.
I was thinking about this 3 years ago, the three of us sitting here, and it might have been four, and we were going back and forth about digital rights, mm-hmm. and, you know, having games on Facebook and some different formats to put your games. And we've seen some of those games and some of those things come to fruition and some of the sales. How much money is in that right now, Commissioner?
Not much, and that's probably the biggest single issue, because we are in this to generate revenue. Ed Graney, Las Vegas radio across the hall here, said that he was watching a Utah State game on Facebook. He said it was awesome, yeah. You know. So it is there, but if you remember, I used that acronym FANG, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, a couple of years ago, and they have now bought some sports rights, but not to the degree that they're paying tens of millions of dollars for those rights. So I think that's still an issue. It's good to have that exposure, but they're just not buying sports rights at this point.
Do you look at the landscape of college football, and when you're negotiating a new contract, do you want to go – because the AAC went long. They went a long-term contract. Do you want to go long, or do you want to keep it short so you can keep maybe some flexibility there?
Short flexibility. You hit right on. We're not going to probably go much longer than 5-6 years.
Do you anticipate an increase?
Yes.
Substantial increase?
A very fair increase.
Okay.
When you're in negotiations and you're talking with TV partners, What types of things specifically are they looking for from your conference to build the increase that Scotty's talking about?
Well, this is really simple, but we're told by both CBS and ESPN, the later you play, the more value you bring to us. It doesn't matter if Utah State's 11-0 and number 15 in the country. That's not the relevancy for them. But then the pushback on our side is 8:39 o'clock kicks and tips. That's already pretty late. I don't know how much later we can go. We really can't go any later than that. So, you know, it's not a Sophie's choice because we're paid to play in those windows. But then you lose the fans and the interest and the following. And, you know, I lose sight of the fact all the time that, you know, an 8:30 Logan kickoff is 10:30 in the East. I mean, they put their pajamas on and they're hitting the hay, you know. And so what do you do on this type of thing? And we fulfill a need for them and provide a window. The Pac-12 and the Mountain West, the only two playing late at night, but it's exposure, but at what cost?
Craig Thompson, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. You got 1 year of the transfer portal under your belt. What are your thoughts on that, and do you anticipate any changes going forward, or is this just going to maybe evolve into kind of the old Wild West as far as transfers go?
Somewhere in between changes and old Wild West. If you read some of the comments being made, you know, people are saying, you know, let's clean it up a little bit, because sometimes you can get waivers for various reasons. We still scratch our head, try to figure them out. I'm not making light of it, but there was a player in our league that transferred from a Mountain West to a Mountain West because his father was dying. Made all the sense in the world. The waiver was granted, but then it was realized the NCAA granted the waiver and his father had been dying for 6.5 years and was still living. Going out, what disease does he have that, you know? And I'm not trying to make light of that kid, but my point is the
right,
waiver.
You don't want to be insensitive, but at the same time, you want to vet it.
Yeah, the waiver is just very broad. And so anyway, I think we'll continue to see even more and enhanced, you know what, 42-44% of all college basketball players transfer at least once. And you come and go, well, he made me run at 6 o'clock. I got depression, you know, this is hard, and, you know, mental anguish, and well, you don't think you're going to run at school. Why? If you transfer, you screw up, you're going to run the steps. I mean, that's age old. But anyway, those types of the NCAA is trying to be more flexible and give student-athletes the opportunity, you know, if it's not right for them, you know, move on. But, boy, it makes it challenging because I think in men's basketball particularly, of the top 15 players, three teams, first, second, and third all-conference, we only have three guys coming back. Thank goodness two of them are at Utah State. It will be a top 25 program. But it's hard. You know, it's hard for a Craig Smith to have to say, well, you know, are you coming? Are you going? Are you, you know, what's happening here? And so, you know, you're reinventing. But it's equal to the point, with the exception of some institutions, and they're more of one-and-done situations than transfers, that, you know, everybody's kind of rebuilding. Almost two-thirds of your roster every year is going to be different. Three-quarters of your roster is going to be different. So you just revamp, start over, and see what you got.
If you were in charge of the format, the restrictions, or some of the freedoms of the transfers, what are some of your suggestions, Commissioner?
Well, you know, I think there'd have to be a little more compelling reason. You know, in my remarks, you know, I was bragging about the academic quality of this league. Three O's, three fives, and, you know, almost 35,000 students in 20 years have been recognized with those achievements. Is, you know, we lose light of the academic component because you're transferring because you're not playing, or you know, you don't like the coach, or you're too far from home, whatever reason. But you can't just go 1-1. You've got 2.5 years at school X and you go to school Y, you might only have 1 year of transferable credits. And so you've gone for an athletic purpose, but what have we left on the road for the academics?
Craig Thompson right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Interesting situation regarding basketball in the tournament.
I understand there's a convention here in Las Vegas, so you had to move up the tournament a week. Is that just a one-term thing, one-year
thing?
Yeah,
so they have a huge construction convention in town, and about the average rate anywhere on the Strip is $300 a night, and our fans and our administrators said, you know, it's just a heavy price to pay, so we moved it up 1 week. It happens every 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And it's happened a couple times since we've been here, and that
okay.
they said, let's just try it once. If I raised my hand and voted, I probably would have kept on the same weekends. You don't have to stay on the Strip. You could stay at the Green Valley Resort.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, but I get it. People want to stay on the Strip when they come to Las Vegas.
Is Vegas is a long-term fixture now for the, you know, I believe that you're going to stay with Vegas for quite some time then.
Yeah, we signed another 3-year extension, so we have had 20 Mountain West basketball championships. 17 have been in Thomas and Mack. We have had 19 bowl games in Las Vegas, and we're going to be moving that game, that match up with the Pac-12. We'll announce that tomorrow. I don't think it's any kind of a secret, but you know, we're still going to engage and involve and use all the amenities of Las Vegas, but it's been a great destination for us.
When that football stadium gets done, do you think of maybe a neutral site for a conference championship game?
Could be. I had a chance 2 weeks ago. The men's basketball committee was in town to tour the stadium with Mark Badane, the GM of the Raiders, and Brandon Dahl and others. And you know, we've socialized that a little bit with our coaches and others about having a championship game instead of the highest-rated champion, division champion.
What are the positives and negatives of a champion having it at their place or a neutral?
Well, that's just it, Hans. You know, we've tried to give the biggest advantage to get that team into that New Year's Bowl, so playing at home is the best advantage you could possibly have if you neutralize that a little bit. I mean, there will be a day our quote-unquote best team and even the regular season champion division winner that hosts will get beat and will, you know, I've missed that shot at a New Year's Eve bowl. It's not the end of the world, but that's why you play the games, right? And so I think we'll have earnest conversations with Las Vegas, with the Raiders, about using the stadium for our championship game somewhere down the road.
When we saw the initial rankings come out and we saw Fresno State, San Diego State, Boise State, Utah State, the top four teams in the two divisions, and the way it works out, is this as strong as your conference has been in a long time?
Yeah, I mean, last year was a phenomenal year. We had three teams in the final AP top 25, two teams in the CFP. I had three teams at and a given point. You know, it was as deep as the league has been from the days of when we were playing in the Rose and Sugar and Fiesta Bowl type settings. So it was a very solid league, and to have three or four potential top 25 caliber teams is fantastic.
Central Florida's obviously had a nice run, but how important is it for you in this conference to get somebody back into that New Year's Six?
That'll be fun. We need to do that because, you know, we you know, again, to have two in the final CFP top 25, we hadn't done that for a couple of years. What I love about that format is that very first year of the CFP 5 years ago, Boise State played and beat Arizona in the Fiesta Bowl with two losses. Back in the old days, you know, the TCUs and Utahs and Boise States were all looking at each other's shoulders. You know, are we going to be able to get into that game? And, you know, you had to be 12-0 and, you know, practically unscored upon. And so, you know, it's a much better situation.
Yeah. So there you go, some of the highlights from Mountain West Conference Media Day. Utah State has got it all wrapped up, and they will begin camp this week. Folks, it is upon us. We count down the start of the college football season, which is about 4.5 weeks away before we start things off at Wake Forest. Remember to download the podcast on any platform, subscribe so you get it downloaded automatically to your phone, tablet, device, whatever you're using. We're available on Spotify, Google Play, Apple, you name it, we're there. Please, all you have to do is search Aggies All The Way Podcast, and you can download it directly to whatever device you're using. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you later this week. We'll have a preview of the Colorado State Rams. We'll post that probably Wednesday or Thursday of this week on another edition of the Aggies All the Way podcast from Learfield IMG College.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.